Welcome to this Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, Episode 49. Welcome to Episode 49. This will be the last in the series of podcasts covering my travels around Oidase and Hokkaido in July 2006. I'll explain the importance of sticking with a subject on multiple visits to get you what you want, with real-world examples as usual. If you haven't caught up on the first episodes of this series, although I'd say each one will be of interest as a standalone, you might want to go back to episode 46, where I started this trip in Oidase in the Aomori Prefecture at the northern tip of the main island of Japan, or from episode 47, in which I cover activities since making the crossing to Hokkaido, the very northernmost island, and the part of Japan which I personally find the best place to be for nature photography. After the amazing morning on Mount Asahi that we finished on last week, it was time to take a steady drive over to Utoro on the Shiretoko Peninsula. If you've been following this podcast for a while, you'll probably have heard me mention before that Shiretoko is a registered UNESCO World Heritage Site. There are two towns on the Shiretoko Peninsula, one on the northwestern shore, which is called Utoro, and one on the southeastern shore, which is called Naos. Naos is where I shot the eagles that we looked at in episode 27. In episode 28, you might remember that we looked at a partially frozen waterfall, and that is just outside of the town of Utoro, where I plan to stay today. The main reason I came over to Shiretoko on this trip was to go out on a boat on the following day, which would be the 20th of July. But for today, I wanted to visit or revisit the Oshinkoshin Falls in the hope of bettering my previous attempts to capture the beauty of this spot. I first shot the Oshinkoshin Falls back in August 2003 during my first visit to Hokkaido, but the overcast skies on the day left the image falling short of what I had visualized. I'm not going to include the image itself in this podcast, but you can take a look at it. It's number 165 on my website if you want to see the results. Remember that to view images by number, you can go to martinbaileyphotography.com and input the number to the small field at the top of the main page or the podcast page, and then click the orange button to jump to the image. If you do look at image 165, you'll see a shot that is actually two vertically shot images stitched together. I had to do this as I was shooting with my 10D at the time, which has a 1.6 times crop factor, and even the 17-35mm f2.8 lens could not fit the entire scene in the frame. Because basically, there's no way to step back any further from the falls than I was standing to make this shot. I went back to these falls, as I said, in February this year, and I got a nice shot of them partially frozen with a nice blue sky as well, but I really wanted a few clouds in the sky to break. The time I visited in February was quite early in the day, and that coupled with the low angle of the sun in the winter sky, you might remember that the bottom of the falls were in shadow. Again, I won't include this image today, but if you want to see the results of the February shoot, take a look at image number 935. The first image that I've included in this week's podcast, though, is the shot that I pretty much wanted to get originally. It's the image that I had visualized back in 2003, and it's image number 1091. Here we can see an image from pretty much the same vantage point as the first two, but this time I didn't need to stitch two images together. I was shooting with my Canon EOS 5D, which is a full-frame sensor camera, so using the 16-35mm f2.8, I was able to fit the entire folds in the frame. This is 1mm wider angle than my old 17-35mm lens, but the main factor is that I didn't have to contend with the 1.6 crop factor of my previous digital SLRs. More importantly for me on this day, though, was that I had arrived shortly before 3 p.m, so there was no shadow across the base of the falls, and I was lucky enough to get the sky that I'd been hoping for, with a couple of wispy clouds to break up the blue. I did use a circular polarizer filter to make the sky just a bit bluer, but also to reduce the shutter speed by 2 stops to give the water that flowing effect. To increase the shutter speed even more, I stopped down the aperture to f22 and selected ISO 50. The result was a shutter speed of 0.3 seconds. As I experiment more with flowing water, I've pretty much come to the conclusion that you need 0.25 seconds or slower to get that effect that I like. So 0.3 was just about going to be enough. Another thing that I like to do when confronted with a scene is see if there are any areas of the scene that would make for a good image if I picked out and shot a close-up. In the next image, number 1095, we can see an example of this. Here I've shot a part of the centre of the right side of the falls with the same f22 and ISO 50 for a slow shutter speed, this time of 0.25 seconds. As I say, 0.25 seconds is about the limit to get the water looking like it's really flowing. I find that this shutter speed, though, it does leave a fair amount of texture in the water instead of making it totally silky. I composed this image with a dark, almost fully revealed rock in the left third section, but with the patch of rock to the right along the edge of the frame, with the water running along the far right, allowing us to see that there is more waterfall to be seen, though leaving it to the imagination. The water in the centre of the frame hits that small ledge and works its way diagonally down through the shot towards the left, leading our eye through the shot and out of the bottom along with the water. Because of the various ledges in the rock throughout the image, though, we can find lots of areas to go back to, keeping the image interesting, despite its overall simplicity. The tip here would be, then, as I said, when faced with a scene, don't just be satisfied with the whole picture. Look for a small area or details that will make for a nice image all by itself. I shot this image at 70mm, so you would not have needed to carry around a really long lens just for this, but a nice medium to long telephoto lens, if you have one, does help in most of the situations for getting in that bit closer. Once again, on my first visit to this area in August 2003, I shot an image that I revisited today. Although I was relatively happy with the original, it was not what I'd visualized, and I wanted to better it, basically. Again, not included in today's podcast, image number 166 is the first attempt to capture 2 rocks that I noticed jutting out of the Ohotsk Sea on my way into Utoro, just after the Oshin-Koshin Falls we just visited. When I first spotted this scene, I shot a number of images, including 166, which is basically a shot in which I had the sun still quite high in the sky, but I exposed for the highlights in the water throwing the rocks into silhouette. At this point, though, I visualized another image that I wanted, and it was a sunset with the sun actually setting between the rocks. Enough sea is visible between the rocks to make this a sunset with a difference. I went back on the same day, shortly before sunset, and although there was a heavy cloud on the horizon, I hung around in the hope that the cloud would break for a moment or two, but it didn't happen. Basically, at this point, I'd got an image in my head, visualized, and it was not to be, so, you know, it's one of those things that I put to memory and then try to revisit at some time in the future. And on this visit, once again, I went back to the same location at sunset in the hope of getting another shot. and the result is image number 1096. The sunset itself was not great, but there was enough red light reflecting from the nearby clouds, and the sun itself was only hidden by a cloud on the horizon for the last degree or so of its path across the sky. And more importantly, for the shot I'd visualized, was that the sun's reflection on the sea was just what I wanted. In my first attempt at shooting this location, I had to shoot with a wide angle because the sun was still quite high in the sky. But this time, I was able to close in on the subjects that initially drew my attention, which are the rocks. You can see that I've cropped very closely to the top of the rocks in the top of the frame, and I included just about the same amount of space in front of the two small rocks in the sea at the base of the image. There's roughly the same amount of sea either side of the rocks too, though the top of the left rock is a little closer to the side for overall balance. I had focused on the edge of the rocks to make sure that this was that the line around the edges of the rocks was sharp, but as I used an aperture of f/16 at 58mm, the hyperfocal distance is 7.1 meters, or 23 feet, which basically means if I focus at anything past that, everything from there on out will be in focus. So the sun and its reflection, and obviously the clouds and everything, are all in acceptable focus. The shutter speed at f/16 with an ISO of 100 was 1/100th of a second. This does initially seem to be a little bit dark, especially in the web version, but the brighter versions I also shot lose the atmosphere that I was after. Basically, I'm now happy that I've got something worthy of my web gallery, and I'm probably for my portfolio too. As you will now have realized, two of these last shots are the results of visualization and revisiting a location multiple times to get the shot. Later on, before we close today, I'll talk a little more about this, as I have another great example to come. But for now, let's continue our journey chronologically by moving on to the other reason I was here in Shirotoko, in addition to wanting to revisit these falls and the rocks. I had planned to go on what they called a nature boat ride on the 20th. Unfortunately, although the weather had been great on the 19th, my luck had ran out on the day of the boat trip. I called from the hotel before leaving to check that the boat would go out, and they instructed us, that's basically what they asked us to do the day before, and the answer was yes. Hopefully, that mist that we could see from the hotel would clear at some point after putting out to sea, but it was not to be. We did board the boat along with about 8 or so other nature-loving passengers and sailed the choppy waters for a while along the edge of the Shirotoko Peninsula. As this is a World Heritage Site, it's not possible to get any closer than the boat does in a number of places, but on the day, the mist was just so thick that there wasn't much chance to see anything much at all. I was hoping for a chance to see maybe a deer, or even, if I had amazing luck, a brown bear on the shore, which is sometimes possible here. But as you can see in image number 1097, the mist was quite heavy, making it only really possible to see any detail, this much detail, when we were this close to the shore. I have uploaded this image, and in fact only really talking about it today more as a documentary shot, so that I don't forget I was there. We travelled the whole length of the shore to the tip of the peninsula and could make out some of the great waterfalls and scenery, and I photographed most of it for posterity, but really that was it. There was very little else, there was little other that I would like to share. I kind of like this shot made at f/6.3 for 1/250th of a second with ISO 400. I was shooting with my 100 to 400 millimeter lens at 250 millimeters for this particular image. Technically, I was pretty happy to have gotten the shoreline level at the bottom of the frame from a heavily rocking boat, that is, and I managed to compose the image with the waterfall to the left and the four cormorants flying over to the right, in the right third there, flying out of the frame. The birds do help to add some contrast against the pale and misty background, but I'm not overly thrilled with this shot. I'm afraid that the company that I chose for there promised to get in close, as only the small boat they use allows, was perhaps more sales patter or jargon than something they were actually trying to achieve. At least that was my impression from this day. It was incredibly cold out on the sea for this time of year, due to the mist and the wind factor from the boat as it was speeding along. We travelled for a couple of hours to the very tip of the Shiritoko Peninsula, but again the weather was against us, so nothing really to show for it photographically. I did have my 600mm f4 lens ready on a monopod for most of the time, and I managed to get a snap of three dolphins, or more accurately, harbour porpoise, or their backs, that is, as they surfaced around 100 feet or so away. But that, too, was a pretty nondescript shot, as they were just too far away. We did spend a few minutes chasing them around, but as soon as the boat got anywhere near to them and turned so that we could see them, they sped off again, making me think once again that the company that I chose were not really that good at this sort of tour. Originally, this was to be the last day of the trip. The plan was to get off the boat and then drive as fast as I could, probably taking around 7 hours or so to get over to the ferry port, and then spend the night on the 20th on the ferry before arriving on the morning of the 21st, and then spending the day taking a steady drive back to Tokyo, 600 or so kilometres away. If you remember back in episode 47, though, I briefly mentioned that I had been hoping to shoot the standard image of the flower fields at the farm Tomita in Furano. We looked at image number 1049, in which I showed you the poppies that had started to bloom but were still a little sparse and therefore not quite completing the red stripe in the field that I was looking for. I'd basically been too early for this red stripe in 2005 when I came, and like I say, at this point they were still a little sparse, so they weren't quite there, even in my 2006 visit. So realising that the timing of my visit this year was still just a little bit early, I changed my plans and extended the trip by one day so that I could go back to Furano one more time before getting the ferry back to the mainland. This was also partially because I was a little bit worried about having to make such a long journey, the 7 hour journey to the ferry, and if I didn't make it, I would probably have had to have paid the ferry fee anyway, as I'd booked it in advance. We're going to take a look at three shots from this field now, as I want to explain my thought patterns as I made these shots. Firstly, I snapped the standard. Image 1099 is what I wanted since my first visit to Furano in August 2003. This is the sort of image that is used in travel brochures for the Furano area and indeed for Hokkaido in the summertime. Today the clouds were perfect, nice and wispy, but with a great blue sky, and the red line of poppies was exactly what I've been waiting for. I had to queue 20 minutes or so just to be able to get to the rope at the boundary of the side of the field between the hordes of other photographers waiting to make exactly the same image. People were trying to push in front of me, but I sort of guarded my position in the queue pretty well. And then a guy from China kindly moved his tripod slightly to the right and allowed me to get mine in with the legs of my tripod between his and the guy on the other side. Once in, I spent some time waiting for the cloud formation to improve and experimenting with various angles. The resulting first shot was made with my 24-105mm f4 lens for 1/30th of a second at f16 to ensure lots of depth of field. I was using ISO 100 and a minus 1/3 exposure compensation to keep the bright colours of the flowers and the sky saturated but without looking underexposed. At this point I was a happy teddy. I had the shot that I'd been trying to get for 3 years. But as photographers we don't walk away from a scene like this one once we've got the standard shot. We may even consider not even taking the standard shot. It's... It's something that I'd like to do, but you know, we can even just walk past this. I moved 10 paces to my right along the footpath at the edge of the field where there was no queue because everyone was only looking to shoot the standard image, and I positioned my camera for image number 1100. This time what I did was tried something more original that I've not seen done here. You may remember from episode 46 from Oirase, the first place I visited before crossing to Hokkaido the previous week, that I have been trying to include movement in still images by using a slower shutter speed to purposefully introduce subject blur when the subject moves in the wind. Now, if the entire subject is moving, this will just give you a totally blurred image that might not be of any use at all. It could be, you know, there could be a nice abstract image gained in that way, but quite possibly not what you're after. If just parts of the image is moving, though, I think that this can be quite effective. We can see in image 1100 that the barley in the foreground is swaying around in the breeze, with just a few heads of the barley sharp as they were stationary for long enough to register in the image. The movement in the scene is perhaps more prominent in the full-sized image than on the web version, but I'm hoping that you can see what I'm getting at. I was using a circular polarizer, as for the last shot for that matter, to get the blue sky as blue as possible. But for this image, I also was using an ND8 circular neutral density filter. This gave me a shutter speed of half a second at f22 with ISO 100. Plenty slow enough to introduce movement in the barley as the breeze caught it. And I did have to time the shot right as the breeze was not constant. A number of attempts, I think maybe 7 or 8 of this exact same composition and settings, allowed me to get one image in which a few heads of barley were stationary so as not to go and overdo it. Now, I've taken the standard shot a little further here by experimenting a little, but I was still shooting with very similar perspective as the first shot. In image 1101, though, my favourite shot from this location, you can see that I've now switched to a much wider angle. I used my 16-35mm f2.8 lens at 22mm with a shutter speed of 1/13th of a second now at f22, still at ISO 100. The 13th of a second shutter speed was slow enough to give us some subject blur in the barley, so that there is some effect that we see or that we saw in the last shot, but not as prominent. What's happening in this shot, though, is the clouds, as you can see, are radiating out from a point somewhere just off center of the image. Also, all of the bands of flowers are radiating out from a similar point, and the direction of the breeze that we can now see, thanks to the slow shutter speed, is also radiating out from the same point. This gives us the feeling that the whole image is emanating from a place just left of center, and this is emphasized by the wide angle. When viewed at full screen, you can actually more clearly make out around 6 people standing up on the right of the image to the right of that line of trees, which actually adds scale and another point of interest. Basically, I'm very pleased with this image, and I'm so glad that I extended the trip to continue and come back here a number of times to enable me to get this this what I think is a pretty spectacular image, although I shouldn't say it myself. Of course, sometimes good planning and a touch of luck will help you get a winning image the first time you visit a location, but as with the first few images we looked at today of the waterfall and the sunset between the rocks, and again with this last image, which I do think is a real winner, you need to persevere a little more and make the trip a number of times at different times of the year or different times of the day. I'm not saying that you won't get great shots if you don't do this. Quite often you can get the shot you're after first time, and I don't think that you need to spend months and months and many visits to get a shot if you're lucky enough to get something you are happy with first off. Of course, some things will happen only once, and trying to better them can be a waste of time, probably also a waste of money and effort. But also I find it to be very important to recognise that when something that you've got can be made better by further visits. Bear in mind that the weather is something that we cannot control. I thought I was going to get it just right with the timing of the poppies blooming when I got to this location 1 week earlier as well, you know, 1 week before this image, but it wasn't quite there. So even making the opportunity to visit multiple times on a single trip, even extending the trip as I did this time, just to get the opportunity is something that we may often find necessary to get the winning shot. It could, of course, have gone the other way. It rained a lot throughout the last week, and today may not have been clear. The cloud formation that adds so much to this shot at this particular time, although I saw similar clouds during the day, at this location, it only lasted a few minutes. Had I been in this position maybe a few minutes earlier or later, I would not have got the image. In episode 11 of this podcast, from way back in November last year, I discussed how good planning is essential for getting yourself to a location at the right time. But often it's down to luck as to whether you get that additional element or two to set your images apart from other photographers. In this image, I believe I've done that, turning a very common image, a very popular location to photograph, into something just a little more special. Experimenting and visualization, perseverance at the end of the day, and I guess that all-important element luck, are what set your work apart from the rest. So moving on to the last few images before we close this series, let's take a look at image number 1103. In the field next to the one we've just looked at, there is a long band of sunflowers. I shot a number of images and the others are online if you want to take a look. Again, there's a link in the show notes to list all images from this trip. For this image, though, I decided to do something different again. You know that I love shooting flowers with my macro, but a macro lens is not necessary to fill the frame with a large sunflower head. What I did was decided to go the opposite way, and I used my 16-35mm 2.8 lens to get a slightly different perspective once again. I shot this at 27mm at f2.8 at ISO 100, which gave me a shutter speed of 1/640th of a second. At this wide angle, an aperture of f2.8 was enough to give me enough depth of field to get the black stamen and the petals on the far side of the sunflower in focus, but also the near side and the large green leaf in the foreground is rendered quite blurred, which is the effect that I was after here. Also, the clouds in the sky are so far out of focus as a result that they really just look like a watercolour painting rather than a real sky. I also was using an angle finder looking down into the camera for this shot to allow me to easily get this angle looking up at the flower rather than the angle I would have got, say, had I just looked straight through the image. I'd have had to have bent down, and that's okay for snapping a shot, but when you're going to be composing images, which I did along a number of flower heads here, it's better if you don't have to strain yourself so much. So I was using the angle finder to make it easy to look up. I'm quite pleased with the results, and I hope that you can also appreciate what I'm trying to do here. From here, I had a few more hours left before making the couple of hours drive over to the Tomakomai ferry port, and I took a steady drive through the hills of BA that we also visited in the first part of this three-part series on Hokkaido. The sky was nice for a fair number of times through the day, often showing up some streaky patterns throughout my remaining few hours. And in image number 1108 from the Hokusei no Oka viewing platform, you can see the last shot for today of the hills around BA. And also a nice sky, a nice big sky with those wispy clouds. Shot at f16 for 1/80th of a second at ISO 100. There's nothing special about this shot and nothing that I really want to say about it other than this marks the end of my trip. I hope you've enjoyed this virtual tour around my favorite part of Japan, which is Hokkaido. So that's it. It's been a total of four parts when we include the first week in which we visited Oirase in the Aomori Prefecture. Like I say, I hope you've enjoyed the trip. If you have got even a fraction of the enjoyment that I got in traveling around the locations we've covered over the last 4 weeks, then I'm sure you will have done. Remember that you can contact me with feedback, good or bad, either by registering at the martinbaileyphotography.com website and sending me a private message via the forum, or you can use the contact form on the martinbaileyphotography.com podcasts page. I'm always interested to hear what you have to say, and I promise to reply to every mail that I receive, so please do feel free to drop me a line. Finally, I'd like to just give you one last quick reminder that we are now into the last week of shooting for the Depicting Cultures assignment. You will be able to upload your entries until midnight on Sunday, the 20th of August. So have a great week doing whatever it is you do, and thank you very much for listening. Bye bye.